Hey, I wanted to say this real quickly. If you're a guest with us today, if this is the first time that you've been here, or you're just kind of been here a time or two or three or four or ten, and you're still sorting out if Catalyst is the place for you, can I extend a warm and authentic welcome? Hope you sense that this is a good place, and that you're wanted here. There are communication cards in the seat back in front of you, and if you get a chance to fill one of those out, if you need to give us information, you can drop that off at the coffee bar. We're in a second week of a series on parenting, and one of the big theme of our series is to raise not perfect kids, but positive kids. And so I hope we can move in that direction a little bit, and you guys can think with me. I'm probably going to have a whole lot of negative ramifications from what I want to do next, but 33 years ago today, I became a parent for the very last time. Sarah, happy birthday. I figured it's better to ask for forgiveness than permission. So we want to look today at some teaching that we'll entitle Let Them Paint Their Own Picture. You know, I don't think that any of us would profess to being a perfect parent. I absolutely know at least some of my shortcomings as a parent. And I suspect that if you've been parenting 3 weeks, you already have become aware of some of the challenges of that. Furthermore, if you're a person maybe that isn't currently engaged in that role of parenting, but you have people that you influence, that you feel like it's important that you speak into their lives, you also realize what a daunting task that is. It's especially challenging, I think, for me today to do this material on parenting with the result of it sitting in the room. You can make the evaluation however you want. I think I did well at least on that one. So, but none of us are perfect, and the fact of the matter is, I know that in years gone by, people have always wanted to make the jokes about the pastor's kids and how bad they are. I always felt like the reason they were bad was because they had to hang out with the elders' kids. Which, by the way, I want to mention to John and the other elders, I don't want to pretend to speak for Roland and Jean, but I don't think any of us have ever served at a place where we feel more appreciated all the time. So I say you don't have to worry so much about Pastor Appreciation Month because you have Pastor Appreciation ! At church. At any rate, I was thinking about this pastor's family. They had these two incredibly rambunctious little boys that actually were being very disruptive at church. And finally, some of the leadership of the church felt like they needed to just say, hey, how can we help you get these kids under control? Which translates into every time that they're around, they wreak havoc and nobody can get anything done. So, they got to talking and the leadership team said, we've made arrangements, if you're wanting to do this, for you to take your kids to this pastor down the next block who has a wonderful reputation for being able to, quote, straighten kids out. And so, interestingly enough, the couple agreed to let their kids go see this pastor. And they both went at the same time, but they were going to see him at different times. So the older of the two was about 8. He was sitting in the office, and this pastor was talking to him, and he was very kind and gentle at first. And and he said, young man, you do believe in God, right? And the kid said, of course I believe in God. My dad's a pastor. Of course I have to believe in God. But they had this conversation, and once it was determined that the kid really did believe that there was a God, the pastor who was interviewing him felt like it was important to ask him, well, where is God? You know, I think he was asking more of a question like, you know, is God in your heart? Is he in the church? Is he in heaven? Is he present in the world? Where's God? You know, that's a fairly benign but challenging theological question for an 8-year-old. And the 8-year-old didn't answer, and so the pastor started speaking a little more firmly, you know, where is God? Until finally it became clear why he was so effective at getting kids straightened out, because he became much more aggressive, and finally he kind of raised his voice fairly significantly and said, where is God? And the kid got up and bolted out of the room, ran home. His brother followed him out of the waiting room, and they found him. The younger brother found the older brother curled up in a closet in the house in the fetal position. And his brother opens the door and he says, what in the world happened in there? What's going on? And the kid said, God is missing and they think we did it. I sometimes think that there isn't any group of people who managed to pull this off perfectly. The pastor had the rambunctious kids, and you know, I have my kids that, you know, I'm very proud of, but I know I wasn't a perfect father. And I can think back on some of the mistakes that I made as a father, and they kind of fit into what we're going to talk about today. And I suspect that even as I begin this conversation, you're beginning to think of some of the things that you wish you could get back. And I will tell you this, you can't get them back, but you certainly can, with the Spirit's help, engage in new and fresh and different ways. We don't ever quit learning how to be parents. All three of my kids are grown, married, and out of my door, off of my payroll, right? And it's a good thing. But I still want to tell you this, the most significant thing in my life, one of the greatest joys I have still is just hearing one of my kids say, Dad. It's a powerful thing because it reminds me of the tremendous trust God had in me to give me these three beautiful creations to nurture, to parent, to get angry with, to love on, to hug, to miss sleep over. And so I think it's really important for us to be able to recognize that we're not perfect at it. Robert Browning made a comment once that I thought was pretty important. You can see it on the screen. He said, my business is not to remake myself, but to make the absolute best of what God has made. Well, Browning's comment, I think, in some ways becomes descriptive of the parent's job description whenever that parent realizes that that's not only true for himself or herself, but for children or other people that come under your influence. Our job isn't to remake people over into what we think they ought to be, even our own children, but to rather to recognize that God has done something when he created this person and entrusted them to us, that we're not compelled to remake, but rather to empower. If there's one word that would encapsulate the job description of a parent, it is to empower. And I think that's an amazingly simple thing. Psalm 139:14 fits into this incredible psalm. One of the things you ought to do this afternoon before you take your Sunday afternoon nap during the second half when the Colts are blowing their lead, is maybe to read this whole psalm. It's a powerful psalm, but one of the things that I'm struck with in that psalm is how David talks about how much God knows about him. You hem me in another verse, behind and before. You have laid your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. And his comment has to do with how God knows him so intimately. And it's even a matter of recognizing that his knowledge of us is so intimate and so profound and so unfathomable, yet we are in Psalm 139:14. You know, he says, I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. Fearfully and wonderfully made. That's a key phrase in that passage of Scripture. And I wanted to take a little bit of time and talk about it because those things are not just about me. When David said that, David wasn't the only fearfully and wonderfully made person that ever walked. What he was recognizing is that all of creation, all of human creation, is fearfully and wonderfully made. And that has some really serious implications for us when it comes to being a parent. Because let me tell you this. When we talk about a sermon series entitled How to Raise Not Perfect But Positive Kids, we're not going to be able to give you this list of four special things you can do to get it done in a perfect way. Because the reality of it is, parenting is much more an art than a science. It has more to do with who we are than what we do. It has to do with what our kids catch rather than what we teach. Now, I'm not saying that we don't teach and we don't try to impart to them the knowledge that they need to succeed in life and especially to come to know Christ and live out that relationship. But the fact is that our kids catch our faith and they catch our love and they catch our attitudes and they catch our perspective on them far more readily than they do hear it with words. And the way that we shape those attitudes, the way we shape how we live in their presence has everything to do with recognizing that every single person in the world is fearfully and wonderfully made. And so I want to kind of unpack those phrases just a little bit as we talk about it. And the first thing I wanted to make sure we looked at is a statement that says every person is fearfully made. Now, I know that sometimes when I wake up in the morning, back when I had hair and looked in the mirror, I knew I was fearfully made. But, you know, in this context, the word fearfully ought to be understood in a different way. In our culture, fear is this thing from which we shrink. It is this thing from which we withdraw. But in Old Testament culture, the word that we translate fearfully in that book, in the Psalms, is much more a word that implies something that produces reverence, something that makes us stand back in awe and recognize and picture that there's something magnificent, something divine, something beyond ourselves, you know, that is a critical piece of it. The fact is that when we say that every person is fearfully made, one of the things we're saying is that God did a very good job on that person. Now, there are things that enter into the picture that sometimes make that very good job somewhat difficult to discover. But the reality of it is, when we could cultivate the attitude that those people we influence, and especially those children that God has entrusted to us, are fearfully made, what we begin to realize is that God did something magnificent. When he knit that child together, even before its birth. And that's amazing. Because sometimes it's hard to remember, you know, because parenting has all of these ups and downs. Sometimes it's exhilarating. Sometimes it's disappointing. Sometimes it's a powerful, positive thing. Sometimes it's a draining piece. Sometimes we feel like smashing successes at it. Sometimes we feel like dismal failures at it. And then you always throw in the no sleep part, which everybody that's ever had kids knows that you get to sleep again when they're 30. But not before. Don't get your hopes up if you've got three-year-olds. So, you know, in that context, what I wanted to say to you is that in the midst of all of the emotions that run up and down and in and out, then that the reality remains that that little guy, that teenager, that grown adult that's struggling or bringing you great joy has been made in such a way that you can stand back and be in awe that God has entrusted you with something that He so wonderfully created. Doesn't that change how you see your kid? Especially when they're up at 3 o'clock in the morning for the 9th straight day. Or when they miss their curfew for the 9th straight day. In either case, you don't get any sleep. By the way, did I ever say anything about parenting not producing a whole lot of sleep? You know, the fact is that we come to those moments when we realize we things right, and we've done some things that are a little bit more challenging. I love the story about the little guy that his mom had called to him, and she wanted him. He'd kind of fudged a little bit on the truth, and she wanted to have a conversation with him. So she brought him in to where she was, and she said, "Johnny, I want you to sit down." And he said, "No." And so she said, "Johnny, I want you to sit down." And he said, "No." And finally, after several times, she used his middle name. And you know what that means if you've ever been a parent or a child, which most of us fit into one category or the other. She finally used his middle name, and she said, "John, I want you to sit down right now." And so he finally sat down because she used the middle name, but he looked at her and he said, "I just want you to know something, Mom. I might be sitting down on the outside, but on the inside, I am still standing up." You know, there's this nature, even though our kids are fearfully and wonderfully made, there's also this nature that makes life a little bit challenging because we have this fallenness about us that needs to be redeemed. And so when we look at our kids, we have to remember that they are this incredible gift entrusted to us, but they have this nature that needs redemption. And so that's going to be something that we're going to want to try to impart to them. That part of what we do is that we live in their presence. We live in such a way that they know that the source of who they are is God Himself. Now, to put that into some context and to be completely transparent, I wanted to take a couple minutes and tell you a little bit about my story. My family traces its roots back to the coal fields of southern West Virginia. My dad was a coal miner when I was born, and when I was born, we lived in the company housing. He was paid with the company scrip. Most of you don't even know what that is, but it was, instead of money, they gave him scrip that they could use at the company store where we had to shop because that's where our money was good. And we lived in the company house, and you know, it was not really the picturesque suburban life that so many of us strive for, right? But when I was 2 years old, my dad lost his job, which at the time we thought was really, really terrible, ended up being the best thing that ever happened to us. And so he went to work for one of the chemical companies, one of the large chemical companies in the Charleston, West Virginia area. But here's the ironic thing. We, in both of the places my dad worked, there were huge dichotomies between the people that ran companies and the people that were management in companies and the people that worked for companies. And we were at the bottom end, and the people that were well-educated, and especially in the case of the industries where he worked, the people who really were the bosses and who got to say what everybody else did and actually who made good money and lived in the neighborhoods that everybody else would drive by and say, "Wow, that'd be nice." Those were people who were primarily engineers. So my dad raised me to be an engineer. That was the picture. That was the portrait of my life that he painted. Now, don't misunderstand me. I in no way think that he was being a bad father for wanting what was best for me. He thought that was best for me. It's just that that's not what God created me to be. And so for all my life, I was moving toward an engineering career, had enrolled at Virginia Tech at a great engineering school in the South, and And actually, my dad loved it because I had a scholarship. I didn't even have to pay for college, and that was a really a good piece, right? Dads who pay for college, you get that, right? And so one day, another fatherly person in my life called and wanted to take me to lunch. It was my pastor. And he came by and picked me up and said, I want to talk to you about something. And he said, if you'll ever stop and listen instead of just living out this thing that your family has dreamed for you, I think you're called to ministry. I never considered it. He said, by the way, you're preaching Sunday night. So this brave soul put me in front of 200 people and turned me loose, and in 12 minutes, I told him everything I know. Now some of the people to whom I speak wish I would quit after 12 minutes. But in that moment, I realized he's right. This is that for which I was created. And so I'm trying to paint my own picture now. And you know, and it took some adjustment in my relationship with my dad. We had some rough moments. But as he began to realize that this was what was best for me, he came to know Christ in his own life and began to support my decision. And out of that, I finally felt empowered. In my lower 20s, when I was a young man, I finally started to feel the empowerment to paint my own picture that I should have felt years and years ago. Now, I don't want you to miss something. My dad was not being a bad dad, but what he wasn't recognizing is that I was fearfully made, that God had fashioned me. And that's why it's important to look at this and realize that not only are we fearfully made, but we are wonderfully made. And in that piece, as you look at what it means to be wonderfully made, that piece is really, really critical, because when you look at how the psalm talks about us being wonderfully made, what the word really means is that we are created for a purpose, that we're uniquely fashioned, and so that means that as we influence kids, as we influence other people, as we parent, or as we serve in the lives of other kids, and I think about all the wonderful things that happen in our kids' ministry and our youth ministry, what's happening is really Christian parenting at its very best, because what we're trying to recognize is that kids aren't given to us, entrusted to us, so that they can become who we dream about for them. When they're wonderfully made, they're designed by God for a purpose, for kingdom impact. And I will say that the fundamental piece of that is that purpose that they discover grows out of this relationship with Jesus Christ, where they begin to realize how he made them, how he wired them, how he gifted them. And that what parents do then, because they recognize this, is they come alongside their kid, not to push them in a direction of worldly success, but to push them in a direction to walk alongside them as they pursue the direction of being wonderfully made. See, there's a real difference there, a subtle difference there. Don't get me wrong. I think it's great to dream dreams for your kids. It's amazing to dream dreams with your kids. But remember that you dream them with them so that they can be all God created them to be. Do you know that some of the most successful people by the world standards that I know are among the most miserably unhappy and sad people that I've ever met in my life? Some of the happiest people in the world have found their call, their purpose in life, and they're living it out in ways that you could never imagine, impacting for the kingdom, maybe in ways that nobody else even sees. But there is this sense of thriving in them that no amount of distance from God could ever allow. And so, not only are we fearfully made and wonderfully made, but I also want to tell you that every single person is marvelously made. In the NIV that I read to you, to translate the verse from the NIV, it says, I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. The New Living Testament translates it that your works are wonderfully marvelous. Can you just stop and think about this for a minute? That God didn't mess up when he made you, and he did not mess up on your kids. He got it right. I remember when our first son was born. My dad, after, I guess it was maybe he was 8 or 9 months old, maybe close to a year, I don't remember exactly. But my dad had a way with words that was pretty interesting at times. But you know, he was around our oldest, and he said, you know, this is a pretty good little kid here you got. So he told Valerie and I, he said, why don't you leave him alone so you don't mess him up? And I mean, he did say that, I don't know if he really thought Matt was that good of a kid, or if he had that little faith in our capacity to parent. In either case, one of the things that always haunted me about that was that, in spite of my best, one of the things that haunted me about that, first of all, is the simple fact that it's possible to mess your kids up. and one of the ways we do that is by imposing on them that for which they weren't created. And so I think about that a lot, and I wonder, and I'll confess to you with full transparency, the biggest mistakes I ever made as a parent, among the biggest mistakes I ever made as a parent, was to impose my dreams on them, not recognizing that they were fearfully, wonderfully, and marvelously made. Now, all that stuff is more general and philosophical, you know, when we talk about being fearfully and wonderfully made and stuff. But I think those things undergird how we behave toward our kids. You know, and so no good theology, no good biblical teaching leaves you hanging. So I want to make three little suggestions to you about not so much specific things, but some specific attitudes that you can develop. Because here's the deal. Our attitude has to be shaped by this verse if we're going to be able to let them paint their own picture of their life. And the first of those attitudes is we have to figure out how to keep a biblical perspective when it comes to the identity of our children. When we look at our children, we've got to keep this biblical perspective. Now, underlying the biblical perspective is this whole idea that they are fearfully and wonderfully made. Listen to some of the rest of that verse. Your works are wonderful. I know that too well. Can I tell you that when your kids are cooperative, when their grades are good, when they want to go to church with you, when they want to hang out with you on a Friday night instead of go out with their friends, there is no problem keeping the right perspective on your kids. When things are peachy, everything's fine, right? But quite honestly, there are times when you wonder, did I do this right? am I struggling here? Why are they not getting it when it comes to how we taught them? We taught them better than that. You know, there are times when you're going to say that as a parent, and the thing is, you have in order to draw out of them that for which God created them, it's up to you to keep this perspective that reminds you time and time and time again that they are fearfully and wonderfully made, that there is a reverence for God that grows out of that fearfully part, and there's this amazing sense of purpose that grows out of the wonderful part. And in the marvelous part, here's the deal. When we talk about them being marvelously made, what we're saying is that God himself has revealed who he is in those kids. There's a sense of being able to see the image of God. When David said marvelous are his works, he's talking about the image of God being imprinted on that kid. And so whenever you're struggling, whenever you're wondering if you're getting it right, whenever you're frustrated, whenever you can't sleep and you're so tired that you can't keep yourself from flying off the handle, don't forget fearfully, wonderfully, marvelously fashioned by a loving, perfect God. Doesn't that change how you see that crabby, uncooperative child? It has to, or we don't get it right. Another thing, as we try to take this attitude and move forward with it, is that we have to learn to speak words that instill a biblical sense of identity in our children. Sarah, just plug your ears for just a minute. I think some of my deepest regrets are words I chose to speak. Do you realize that how we speak to our kids informs their identity in ways that we'll never fully understand? I think back about growing up, and I think some of the most painful parts of childhood are words or actions that my parents communicated to me in anger, maybe, or just in a complete sense of thoughtlessness. My parents didn't ever intentionally do anything to hurt us, but yet you walk away with a sense of some bad memory at times. And I think one of the things we have to realize as parents is that our words have tremendous power. And those words can either empower or tear down. I think that, and it's more than just what we say. When I talk about speak words, I'm also talking about the spirit with which we speak them and the attitude with which we connect with them. Because in the midst of all that, what happens is that they begin to catch something from us. And what we hope they catch has to everything to do with the song we're going to sing in a minute, where they recognize who they are in Jesus Christ. The great line in the song will say, I am who you say I am. If I could, I'd sing it for you right now, but I can't. One last little piece of the framework of this attitude is to make faith your legacy. In other words, you recognize that what faith you have is something that you hope they catch from you. Now, I'm not denigrating the value of teaching facts about the faith to your children, okay? They have to have that foundation. You've got to do that. You can't count on the church for that either, by the way. The church is going to give it its best shot, but that's not their job. Your job is to make sure your children understand the faith. Okay? However, if all they ever get is the facts, but they don't see it lived out in your life, they will never catch it. So my challenge is for you, all of us, to determine that from this moment forward, faith is the legacy I leave with them. That they see me live as a child of God. They see me understand that I am who He said I am, so that we can pass on to them the same understanding that they are His children. Now, what happens when you do that is when you make faith your legacy, you begin to allow the picture of your child's life to be their creation in partnership with God and you. It's a powerful thing when God, a parent, and a child pursue the purpose for which God created that child. So let me ask you this. Would you be willing to say that from today on, I'm going to partner with God and my child to help them discover, or help my child discover, or the people I influence discover what it is that God wired them to do, created them to do, gave them talents to do, and most importantly, gifted them to do. And instead of imposing my own ideas of worldly success on them, I want my faith to be a legacy in their life so that they can paint the picture. Honestly, that's not so much their own creation, but it's the discovery of God's creation of a picture for them. Wouldn't it be awesome if the church and every parent in the room and every person that influences other people in this room would say, let's paint God's picture for every life connected with Catalyst. Would you do it? Let's pray together. Father, we are so, so, so grateful that you entrust people to us, that those children that are beautiful when they're sleeping, fun when we interact with them, frustrating at times, when we begin to realize that along with the joy and the disappointment, along with the success and the failure, there is the presence of a Father who is helping us partner together to pursue God's dream for every single one of those people. Oh God, help us develop that heart that says, I just want to walk with you so that you find faith, and so that that faith forms the rest of your life. May that be the commitment of every parent, every influencer in this room as we worship together. May our children declare, I am who my Father says I am. Amen.